You are listening to the Forgotten News Podcast, April 10th, 2021.
But before we begin, here are a few words about a couple of other podcasts that we think you might want to try.
This is the Half Hour Bros Podcast with brothers Kurt and Tom.
What's up, everybody? This is the Half Hour Bros Podcast. I'm Kurt.
I'm Tom.
Be a bro. Check us out. We're two bros chilling. Stories, conspiracy theories, beer.
Everybody loves beer.
We know you like it. We're reviewing everything. Hit us up. I got my plug man, Tom. Set it up.
Yo, check us out, halfhourbros at gmail.com, at halfhourbrospod on Twitter. Stop through, check it out, be a bro.
There you go, man. A lot of podcasts out there. Check us out.
Yes, sir.
It is written, the meek shall inherit the earth, but not on my watch. I am King Asylus. I wasn't born to be a king, but America needed something democracy could no longer give her. And so, like a chess master, I made my moves with anticipation and bravado. This is not just my story, nor simply about my rise to power. This is a story about our world and the monsters that control governments. What happens when the monsters cannot control me? The Rise of King Asylus. Listen on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Visit TheRiseOfKingAsylus.com.
Welcome to the Forgotten News Podcast. This is your window to hear true stories from long ago. Stories that once made headlines. Stories that people thought would be unforgettable. Yet those stories were soon lost in the sands of time or were buried deep in the dustbin of history. In this podcast, we shake off the sand and dust from those stories and share them here with you, as fresh as the day they were first told.
And now, here's your hosts.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome to episode 51 of the Forgotten News Podcast.
This is Jim.
This is Kit Karen.
Hello, I'm Jessica.
And
let's get started. Hey, what's up, you guys? Spring is here. And I am hoping, we are hoping, that you are safe and warm and happy and healthy. We also hope that you've gotten the COVID vaccine, if you're eligible where you are.
Well, here in Ohio, they've opened the vaccine to almost everyone. So I made an appointment and got the first shot on March the 16th, and I got the second shot on April the 6th.
I've gotten my first dose, and I'm on track to get the second.
I got the first shot on March 24th. It was the Pfizer shot. And I am incredibly excited about getting the second shot. Honestly, it was not bad. It was easy getting in. only waited for like a few minutes. And then they just jabbed me and I waited there for 15 minutes and then I left. It was very, very easy and I didn't have any type of side effects. So that was great.
I had the same experience as Kit. Everything was easy as pie. I had no side effects with either shot other than some soreness the next day in the muscle area where I got the shot. But even that, I only felt it if I stretched my arm, and the soreness was gone the day after.
Listeners, go get yours as soon as you can, if you haven't already.
I'm really excited to have the extra layer of protection of the vaccine. So, if you have a chance to get the shot, go and get the shot.
Because if you're able to get it and you don't, then we might end up with one less listener. A dead listener.
Actually, if you're dead, you won't be able to listen. And we definitely don't want that to happen.
So, on that note, I think it's time to move on to the featured story.
But first, speaking of death, we are going to give a short warning to everyone in regard to the subject matter of the featured story. Honestly, it is a little hard to categorize this story, but probably the best description would be to say that it is sort of a combination of mystery and spookiness, along with a little bit of true crime thrown in for good measure.
This story revolves around the discovery of 17 doll-sized coffins in Scotland nearly two centuries ago and the aftermath of that discovery. The story will include brief mentions of ancient funeral customs, witches, fairies, and the crimes of a pair of creepy serial killers way back in the late 1820s. So, if you think that hearing about these things could possibly cause you to have a negative emotional reaction, then perhaps this episode might not be something you should listen to.
You've been warned.
We do not recommend this episode for children. It might be a little too scary.
So, if any little sponges are listening nearby, well, it might be a good idea to turn this podcast off until later, or put on some headphones or earbuds. Parental discretion is strongly advised.
By the way, listeners, I previously told a somewhat condensed version of this story on my other podcast, Whispered True Stories. However, on this podcast, the one you are listening to right now, you will be hearing the story narrated not by me, but instead by our wonderful co-host and amazing storyteller, Jessica Malone.
And now, with all of that having been said,
on with the show.
In the early 20th century, a man named Charles Fort was a journalist and researcher who became famous, or infamous, depending on your point of view, As the author of several books that contained literally thousands of unusual facts, occurrences, and other random trivia that contradicted mainstream scientific beliefs and theories. He passed away in 1933 at the age of 54. But if he was still alive today, I wonder if he would be surprised by the fact that none of those books have ever gone out of print. His first book was titled The Book of the Damned, and it was published in 1909. However, one of the most mysterious incidents mentioned in the book had nothing to do with science or scientific theory or any other type of challenge to the mainstream understanding of reality. And for many people, it is the incident that they most vividly remember from the book, notwithstanding that it is only a few sentences that describe an obscure historical event.
Early in July 1836, some boys were searching for rabbits' burrows in the rocky formations near Edinburgh, known as Arthur's Seat. In the side of a cliff, they came upon some thin sheets of slate, which they pulled out. Little cave. 17 tiny coffins, 3 or 4 inches long. In the coffins were miniature wooden figures. They were dressed differently, both in style and material. There were 2 tiers of 8 coffins each, and a third tier begun with 1 coffin. The extraordinary datum, which has especially made mystery here, that the coffins had been deposited singly in the little cave and at intervals of many years. In the first tier, the coffins were quite decayed, and the wrappings had moldered away. In the second tier, the effects of age had not advanced so far, and the top coffin was quite recent-looking.
Mr. Fort did not get this story from some local legend or an old wives' tale. It came directly from an article published in a respected newspaper, the London Times, of July 20th, 1836. So the coffins were real. They were not imaginary. And for over a century, the description by Fort and the article in the London Times were basically everything that was known about them, other than the fact that the coffins were about 3.7 inches, or 9.3 centimeters in length, approximately 1 inch, or 2.5 centimeters deep, and that the wooden figures all had wide-open eyes, and were dressed in plain cotton clothes that covered the thin bodies. According to the first published article regarding the discovery, the coffins were made from a single piece of wood, with the exception of the lids, which were nailed down with wire or brass pins. In addition, quote, "the lid and sides of each are profusely studded with ornaments, formed with small pieces of tin, and inserted in the wood with great care and regularity." Unquote. According to the same article, quote, "a number of them were destroyed by the boys pelting them at each other as unmeaning and contemptible trifles." Unquote. Now, the actual chain of events as to what happened next is unclear. However, the remaining coffins that were brought down from the hillside were acquired by Robert Fraser, the owner of a jewelry shop in Edinburgh, who put them on display in his private museum. The collection was sold at auction in 1845 when Mr. Fraser retired for the sum of £4, which is the equivalent of about 485 pounds, or $640 in the present day. The identity of that purchaser is unknown, other than the fact that it was a private person, And even though it might be hard to believe, the name and location of the owner of the coffins was a complete secret until the year 1901, when a set of 8, together with their contents, were donated to the National Museum of Scotland by their then owner, a woman named Christina Cooper. These 8 miniature coffins are the only ones which still exist in the present day. According to an article published in Smithsonian Magazine in April 2013, the hole in which the coffins were discovered was, quote, about 1 foot in height and about 18 inches wide, and was opened up with trowels, unquote. And for listeners who use the metric system, 1 foot is approximately 30 centimeters and 18 inches is about 45 centimeters. A trowel is a hand tool that a group of boys who were out and about looking for rabbit burrows might have carried on their person. In 1994, the coffins and the wooden figurines were carefully examined by experts for the first time. The examination was conducted by historian Alan Simpson, a former president of the Royal Scottish Society of Arts and later a member of the Faculty of History and Classics at Edinburgh University, together with Samuel Menefee, a senior associate of the Center of National Security Law and the University of Virginia. They determined that 2 of the coffins were originally painted pink or red, and that the interior of one was lined with paper made with rag fiber. They further concluded that the overall roughness of the structure of the coffins, particularly the corners, indicates that they were not made by someone with professional woodworking skills or the tools of a woodworker. The wooden dolls or figurines within the coffins were also studied. Each of the 8 were found to be neatly carved from white wood and to have approximately identical height, weight, and size. Quote, some have arms, but several dolls have had them removed, apparently to allow them to fit neatly into its coffin. Unquote. This fact, together with the quote-unquote rigidly erect bearing of the figures, led Simpson and Menefee to the belief that they are the remnants of a group of toy soldiers. This conclusion was supplemented by the fact that each doll would stand upright with the addition of a small weight on its front, such as if the figures had originally included a small toy musket. In addition, as commented by the researchers, there would have been no need for the carvings to be able to stand upright if they had been intended to simply represent dead bodies. Also, the features on each wooden figure are very similar, and, quote, it seems unlikely that the figures were ever intended to represent particular individuals. Moreover, the open eyes of the figures suggest they were not originally carved to represent corpses, unquote. The researchers were, however, able to verify that the figures had been buried during or shortly prior to the early 1830s, based on the type of cloth and thread which had been used to create the clothing that covered the dolls, including the fact that some of the figures had been sewn into their clothing. Now, as far as the precise year of the burials, the article in the Smithsonian Magazine makes the following observations in regard to the Simpson-Menefee report in conjunction with all other available information. Quote, none of this proves that all of the burials took place as late a date as 1830. It is possible that the decayed surviving figurines represent burials that took place earlier than this. Nonetheless, it does seem possible to suggest that all the burials took place at the outside, between about 1800 and 1830. Unquote. The article goes on to say, in essence, that it is equally possible that all of the burials took place during the 1830s, or even that all 17 figurines were placed in the cave either at the same time or, quote, over a comparatively short period, unquote. Now at this point, just for a moment, we will return to the topic of the discovery of the coffins. There are a few additional details which were published in an article in the Edinburgh Evening News in 1836. Quote, the mouth of the little cave was closed by 3 pen pieces of slate stone, rudely cut at the upper ends, and so placed, apparently, to protect the interior from the effects of the weather. Unquote. The same article further stated that 8 surviving coffins had been retrieved by the boy's schoolmaster on the day following the discovery. And, by an unusual coincidence, this schoolmaster happened to be a member of the local archaeological society. Now, at this point, the coffins were still unopened, but the schoolmaster, quote, took them home in a bag, and that evening he settled down in his kitchen and began to pry the lids open with a knife. He took them to the next meeting of his society, and his colleagues were amazed. Unquote. Interestingly, there is one very noteworthy omission from all the newspapers that were published in 1836. There was not even one article that mentioned the name of any of the boys who actually found the coffins. That omission is a mystery. But it is beyond question that the biggest mystery of all is the question of who carved the figures and coffins and why. And this has been a mystery since the day they were found by the children in 1836. However, there are numerous theories. Charles Fort suggested that they might be fairy coffins. Was he joking? Well, to be honest, who knows? However, most theories are much more dark. Some people have claimed that they are ritualistic offerings to demons or to the devil himself. One local newspaper at the time of the discovery suggested that possibly they were dolls that had been used by local witches to cast spell on their enemies, and that they had each been crafted to resemble the intended victims of those spells. Another theory was that they might represent sailors from the community who had either been lost at sea or who may have died in a shipwreck. Or, perhaps, they were just some very creepy playthings that had been created by some unknown children long ago, then simply forgotten as the children grew older. But as noted by Simpson and Menifee, the most significant feature of the burial is the number. Namely, the fact that, quote unquote, there were 17 coffins. More specifically, according to Simpson and Menifee, quote, if the burials were event-driven by, say, the loss of a ship with 17 fatalities during the time period in question, the speculation would at least be built on clear facts. Stated another way, what we seek is an Edinburgh-related event or events involving 17 deaths, which occurred close to 1830 and certainly before 1836. One obvious answer springs to mind, the Westport murders committed by William Burke and William Hare in 1827 and 1828. Unquote. Now, it is unknown whether there was any Scottish disaster involving a ship in the early 19th century with the loss of 17 lives. However, it was very common in that time period for so-called mimic burials to be held for grieving families in the aftermath of the sinking or shipwreck if lives were lost at sea and the bodies were unable to be recovered. So it is possible that the little coffins were an attempt by someone to create their own version of a mimic burial. However, the theory that has most widespread belief and support by historians and other experts is the possibility that the coffins were intended to represent the victims of Burke and Hare. These were two men who were serial killers and professional grave robbers, who committed their crimes for the sole purpose of obtaining fresh corpses that they could then sell to medical schools, which were constantly in need of undecayed bodies upon which students would be able to perform dissections. These killers had a total of 17 victims. Their crimes were notorious, and their trial was widely publicized. According to an article written in 2018 by researcher Allison Meyer, quote, in 1827, when one of the lodgers at William Hare's boarding house died suddenly, they sold his remains to a professor of anatomy, Dr. Robert Knox, for £7.10, which is the equivalent of approximately 618 British pounds or $820 US in the present day. But rather than waiting for more spontaneous deaths, the pair turned to murder, targeting travelers and downtrodden characters whose disappearance was not likely to be noticed, unquote. The crimes of Burke and Hare were finally discovered when they became careless and began to kill local residents who were not only missed, but also recognized by students of Dr. Knox at the medical school. This series of random killings lasted 10 months, during which Burke and Hare murdered at least 16 men and women. During this overall time period, the two men earned the equivalent of 12,000 British pounds, or 15,000 US dollars in the present day. After making a small fortune from the sale of their victims to Dr. Knox, they were caught when a lodger discovered a body in a pile of straw. Burke was convicted and hung after Hare made a deal with the prosecution to testify against his partner in exchange for immunity. The hanging took place before a crowd of thousands. The judge had also ordered Burke's body to be dissected, but with his skeleton preserved as a testament to his atrocious crimes. And so, following the hanging, it was sent to the medical school at the University of Edinburgh for that purpose. The portion of his skin that remained following the dissection was bound into book covers. Dr. Knox was cleared of any wrongdoing. However, the incident ruined his career. William Hare was never heard from again. He may have changed his name. Most likely, he went back to his home country of Ireland. But there is a Scottish legend that says he secretly traveled to London, where he fell into a lime pit and was permanently blinded. It was the opinion of researchers Simpson and Menifee that, because the 17 victims of Burke and Hare never had any opportunity for a decent burial, then perhaps the 17 tiny coffins might have been an attempt by some unknown local person to provide them a mimic burial so as to set their spirits at rest. Simpson and Menifee further commented, quote, while it is always possible that other disasters could have resulted in an identical casualty list, the Westport murders would appear to be a logical motivating force. Unquote. Some researchers have put forward a theory that the pieces might have been created by an unknown accomplice of the killers, or possibly even by Burke, prior to his capture, as a weird, indirect way of making amends or atonement for their crimes, since the woodworking and tin decorations could suggest the skills of a shoemaker, which was Burke's profession prior to becoming a serial killer. However, since Burke and Hare were arrested almost immediately after committing their 17th murder, they would have had no realistic opportunity in which to create and bury the final doll and coffin. In addition, notwithstanding the popularity of the theory that the coffins were intended to represent the men and women who had been killed by Burke and Hare, some researchers have objected on the basis of the indisputable fact that 12 of the murder victims were female, but the wooden dolls in the coffins were all dressed in male clothing. Furthermore, as noted in the article by Allison Meyer, quote, "The eyes of the figures are open, not closed like a corpse," unquote. 8 of the coffins have been on display almost continuously at Edinburgh's National Museum of Scotland since 1901. David Forsyth, a curator at the museum, recently commented in an article on the website Mental Floss that, quote, "It's the mystery behind them that makes them so compellingly intriguing. They can be linked to the more intangible aspects of our culture and history, or to real episodes such as Burke and Hare," unquote. In the year 2018, it was reported that Jeff Nisbet, an author and amateur historian who originally came from Edinburgh before moving to the U.S. when he was a boy, announced the conclusions of his research regarding the coffins. He stated that it was his belief that the coffins were created as a memorial to the men who had died in connection with a somewhat obscure political uprising known as, quote, "the Radical War of 1820, unquote. According to Nisbet, a large number of poorly paid workers and cloth weavers from the Edinburgh area were arrested following a series of strikes and other protests aimed at improving their pay and working conditions. Many of the supporters of the movement were arrested, put on trial, and convicted of rioting or other alleged crimes. Some were punished by being exiled to Australia, and several of the leaders were executed. The majority, however, were sentenced to work building a path that would become known as the Radical Road. Nisbet is of the opinion that the reason for the creation of the coffins and wooden figures was, quote, "to keep the flames of rebellion lit and to honor those radicals who had lost their lives and deserve to see their cause revived by later generations," unquote. The article by Allison Meyer concludes with a very strange occurrence in regard to the coffins that took place in the year 2014. A box was delivered to the National Museum of Scotland, but with no return address. Inside the box was an extremely detailed replica of a tiny coffin found in 1836, including the tiny metal ornaments on the lid and the roughly carved face of its enclosed figure. A handwritten note was included with the object. The first line of the note was simply the number 18, but printed in Roman numerals, followed by a question mark. The writer was apparently suggesting that this was an addition to the original group. The note then quoted from the short story The Body Snatcher, written by Robert Louis Stevenson in 1884, and which had been inspired by the crimes of Burke and Hare. The note then stated that the enclosed miniature coffin had been sent as a gift to the museum in appreciation for taking care of the national treasures of Scotland. Yet, although this note and strange gift are a very interesting story, they do not provide any clue towards resolving the mystery of the 17 tiny coffins. To this day, nobody really knows what the miniature coffins are supposed to represent, or why they were found in the place where they were, or who might have put them there. And, sad to say, we probably will never know. Seriously, no matter how good our guesses are, that is all they will ever be. Just guesses. And for that reason, the 17 tiny coffins will remain as one of the most peculiar historical mysteries of all time. And so, with that being said, We are now at the end of our story. So, Kit, Jim, what are your thoughts about the saga of the 17 tiny coffins? Specifically, as to what they were, or who made them, or why they were made.
Here's the thing. A long time ago, I remember reading that quote from Charles Fort, but it wasn't in his book. It was in some other book that was talking about strange mysteries from around the world. And the thing back then is that book really didn't give any ideas as to a possible solution. It was just presented as some weird thing that nobody knew the answer to. And I'm still pretty stumped. I think that the answer could be any of the things that were mentioned in the story. And that's all I can say.
It is just so interesting to me how we can find out about this small blip in history because of a book that's actually big. And he paid tribute to this true story. So that's really nice. And there's so much mystery surrounding these coffins that it just makes me wonder so much. And it really is the greatest story. I mean, kids going out into a cave and finding these 17 tiny coffins. It's, granted, they're not actual people. They're, you know, the wooden figures. But we have no idea what they represent. And that is what is so interesting to me. Because we'll never know. But it's just fun to listen.
I think it's perfectly reasonable to believe that the tiny coffins could have been put there by Burke and Hare. But I don't know. It's hard to say. What an interesting case and a total mystery. I wish maybe there would have been more archaeological investigation where the coffins were found. Maybe there were other clues that were there that the boys didn't pick up who initially found the coffins. What an interesting case.
Points are being made, but unfortunately, it's time to move on to the next segment of our show. However, before we move on, Jim and I would like to express our deepest thanks to our mysterious and beautiful co-host and extremely talented storyteller, Jessica Malone, for narrating the featured story on this episode. Jessica, you did a wonderful job.
Always a great job, Jessica.
The voice of Charles Fort within the story was vocalized by Patrick McCaddy, and was taken from the audiobook of The Book of the Damned, which is available from the LibriVox.org audio library, which has thousands of audiobooks that are available for download absolutely free, because they are all books that are in the public domain.
Listeners, it's a great website. You should definitely check out LibriVox.org. That's spelled LibriVox.org. LibriVox.org.
And with that having been said, we will move on to our regular segment, Police Blotter and Court News, in which we will bring you stories of small-time crooks and other random folks who, for one reason or another, ended up in the machinery of the justice system 100 or more years ago.
And this particular segment will be narrated for you exactly as it was written in a column published in the Cleveland Plain Dealer on October 14th, 1867, in the words of the anonymous reporter who wrote it.
However, before we begin the segment, we will mention two quick things. First, any time that you hear any amount of money described in this segment, for example, as a fine, please be aware that $1 in 1867 is the equivalent of approximately $18 in the present day.
And just to be clear, when we say that, we are talking about the purchasing power of that dollar compared to the present day. So, if the amount of a fine seems low to you, it isn't.
Now, the next thing that we want you to know is that the stories that you will hear on this police blotter and court news segment are essentially a slice of life from the dusty street corners and dark, forgotten alleys of everyday life in the mid-19th century. So, you will hear various mentions of crimes involving violence, drunkenness, prostitution, fraud, and theft.
Listeners, if you think that hearing about any of these things might possibly cause you to have a negative emotional reaction, then this segment might not be something that you should listen to.
So, if that is the case, just skip ahead roughly 7 minutes from now, give or take a few, and it will all be over. And, for the same reasons, parental discretion is strongly advised for any children who might be nearby, since there are some portions of this segment which young ears probably should not be listening to.
By the way, we will once again remind you that in the 19th century, it was very common for reporters or editors to insert their opinions into their descriptions of the news. And you will hear that type of commentary throughout the reporting in this column.
And so, with all of that having been said,
here we go.
Police blotter and court news.
Order in the court. Order.
Municipal Court, Cleveland, Ohio, October 14th, 1867. John Brennan, Patrick Carey, James Shannon, and John Blackwell, charged with public drunkenness. Brennan, having imbibed too freely of whiskey, had engaged in a fistfight with Shannon, and his face looked as if he had just finished the 80th round of a boxing match. He and Shannon were each fined $5 and court costs. The remainder of the accused were each found guilty and fined $3 and court costs. Maggie Roberts, an irrepressible girl, was arraigned for destroying property. She came into court with a defiant and contemptuous swing of her skirts. Maggie, who is 19 years of age, had previously been convicted on several occasions of being a common prostitute. The judge tried to impress upon her a realizing sense of her, quote, lowness and brutality, unquote. But the lecture did not seem to sink very deep, judging from the faces that this degraded creature made at the judge. She was sentenced to the workhouse for 15 days, with the promise of 2 months if she did not behave herself. Maggie is a beautiful and intelligent girl who could easily make an honest living if she chose to do so. John W. Hamilton, charged with embezzlement. His case was continued until Wednesday, and the prisoner was remanded to jail for lack of $2,000 bail. The details of his case make a repetition of the old story of a young man in a responsible business position for whom a deviation from steady habits and a love of finery and fast living is seduced from the path of honesty. Hamilton was the bookkeeper at the hardware establishment of Lockwood, Van Dorn, and Miller on Water Street, and was an unusually skilled accountant. For some time, his employers had suspicioned his taking money that did not belong to him. When, on Saturday week, he was detected in stealing a small amount from the money drawer. This led to his being accused of dishonesty and to a general scrutiny of his books, which elicited the fact that he had been stealing since last May, in large and small sums, to a total amount of between $3,000 and $4,000, with the thefts having been covered up by means of false entries. Hamilton made no attempt at concealment, but freely acknowledged his guilt. His bedroom at 282 Erie Street, which was sumptuously furnished, contained an elegant new piano. In addition to this property, he had a new gold watch worth $350, one diamond pin worth $230, and another worth $75. He had been living the fastest kind of life. His livery bill for the 2 months previous to his arrest being $500. Hamilton turned over all of his property in this city to his employers, which, with $1,400 that he telegraphed from New York City, that nearly made good the amount stolen from them. New York City had been his home, and the $1,400 were a portion of his former wages that he had deposited there. His employers now inform Hamilton that if he will give them $500 more, they will not prosecute him. Several days ago, Mr. Van Dorn wrote to the prisoner's father, who resides in New York City, briefly stating the particulars of his son's crimes and requesting him to come here. On Saturday, Mr. Van Dorn received the following letter from the little sister of Hamilton.
October 11, 1867, New York City. Please tell my brother that neither mother nor father can come to see him. My mother is sick, and my father is so near being insane that it would not be safe for him to travel alone. Please do not be so hard with my brother. He is all I have got. I have no other brother or sister. I am but a little girl. I will pray for you every night if you will spare him. Do forgive him this time. Please let us know the full particulars. Please write as soon as you receive this letter. Very truly yours, Lizzie Hamilton.
Editor's note.
Mr. Hamilton is only 20 years of age, and while there is nothing prepossessing in his appearance, he certainly does not look like a criminal. F.K. Russell, the carpenter who ran away with Mr. Skidmore's money some time ago, was arraigned for obtaining money under false pretenses. It seemed that he received $600 as advance pay for work upon a house, whereupon he ran away to Boston, leaving the work to be done by others. Police Captain Frazee went in pursuit of Russell, arrested him, and returned with his prisoner on Saturday. Mr. Skidmore obtained his money, and through some hocus-pocus, the case against Mr. Russell was dismissed.
The court is hereby adjourned.
And that brings us to the end of the police blotter and court news from October 14, 1867. We hope that this short visit to some of the wild and woolly back streets of yesteryear was an interesting and educational experience for you. But before we move on, we would like to express our deepest thanks to our guest narrator and our guest voices on the police blotter segment. So, please take a bow and tell our listeners anything that you want to say about yourselves.
Hi, this is Moxie LaBouche from Your Brain on Facts, your guest narrator for today. If you enjoyed hearing the sound of my voice, please check out Your Brain on Facts on your favorite podcast app or at yourbrainonfacts.com.
Hi, this is Madison from the podcast Madison on the Air. So, like, I'm from 2021, but I got zapped into the past, I don't know how, and now I'm stuck in old-timey radio shows. You know, the ones like Dragnet, Gunsmoke, and Sam Spade. Aside from not being able to get a decent mocha latte and having zero reception on my phone, it's actually been pretty fun. These are all the real scripts from the radio dramas adapted for me to join in the adventure. Even if you've never heard an old-timey radio show before, you'll definitely still enjoy me meeting characters from, like, almost 90 years ago who to put it nicely, are not exactly woke. New episodes premiere the first of every month and can be found on most podcast platforms or go to our website at madisonontheair.com. Bye!
Hey guys, this is Dina from the podcast So This Is Me Trying. So This Is Me Trying is just a really fun variety podcast where we pretty much talk about everything and anything, music, movies, life. I have some really awesome guests that come on. We're always down for a good laugh. So if you are interested in checking me out, I'm over at Apple Podcasts. I'm over at Spotify. I'm on anchor.fm. You can follow me on social media at SoPoCast. I'm also over on the Instagram at So This Is Me Trying Podcast. So yeah, come check me out and enjoy the ride.
Hi, this is Jerry Kokich. I'm a voice actor, and I'm always working on my craft. I've done a little bit of everything, and sometimes I forget which is my real voice because, yep, sometimes I'm one voice and sometimes I'm another. If you be wanting to contact me, my email address is jerrykokich@yahoo.com. Y'all take care of yourselves now.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks so much for being part of the Police Blotter.
Listeners, we would very much like to be able to tell Police Blotter stories from the 19th century newspapers of your city or town.
So, if you have the time and ability, just send one to us by email, and we promise to use it as soon as we can. The address is ForgottenNewsPodcast@gmail.com.
Next, we will move on to our recommendations and advice segment. We will each take a few moments to mention something that we think our listeners might be interested in hearing about or knowing about.
It might be a book, a movie, a TV show, a podcast, an app, a game, a food, a recipe, or maybe a store, a product, a life hack, or who knows?
It will always be something different.
By the way, we want our listeners to know that we don't synchronize or discuss our comments or suggestions in regard to this segment before we record. That way, it's always a surprise for the listeners and for us.
Now, on this episode, I will go first, then Jessica, and finally Jim. So on this episode, I want to recommend a TV show called Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's a really funny 30-minute comedy. I'm not sure. I believe there was some strange thing about it airing on one network and then going to a next. But I've been watching it on Hulu. Anyway, it's a hilarious ensemble of characters. And the cast is fantastic. So funny, but it's about a captain who comes in and takes over the 99th precinct, a police precinct in New York. So it's definitely funny if you like to laugh, and it's short, so you can just, you know, watch it before work or after work, whatever. Anyway, yeah. Brooklyn Nine-Nine, check it out. It's funny.
Hey, this is Jessica. And this week I have a Netflix recommendation. The History of Swear Words. This show is not kid-friendly, but if you're anything like me, you might be curious about where some of your favorite words originated. Part history and part comedy, The History of Swear Words is educational and hilarious, and it's hosted by Nicolas Cage. I will literally watch anything he does. So tune in for him, if for no other reason. That's The History of Swear Words on Netflix.
My recommendation on this episode is going to be very simple. I will start by saying I am not recommending a website or a podcast or a movie or a book or any of those type of things that I usually recommend. Instead, that you take advantage of springtime weather, go out and take a walk. Assuming it's safe where you are, take a walk in the morning. You'll feel so much better. And if you put on some weight during the pandemic, it'll help you to lose it. Take something to drink. Do that every day for 15 to 20 minutes. And just turn spring to your advantage. And you'll be a lot happier. And you'll be a lot healthier.
And that is the end of the recommendation and advice segment for this episode. But listeners, if you have a suggestion for something that you would like us to mention on this segment, just send us an email, and if it's a good recommendation, we'll pass it along to our audience.
And thank you, listeners, for doing that.
Now, moving along, we will once again ask you, our lovely listeners, to take a moment when this episode is over and go to Apple Podcasts, also known as iTunes. Then rate, review, and subscribe to the Forgotten News Podcast.
But 5-star reviews only, please, because it helps. It definitely helps to bring new listeners and gives us a boost in the rankings.
And listeners, we mean that. We are not kidding. 5 stars only. 5 stars only. 5 stars only.
Next, if you have any thoughts or opinions about this episode, or any prior episode, or any suggestions about the show, just send an email to forgottennewspodcast@gmail.com.
We always like to hear from our listeners.
We are also on Facebook and Twitter. Just type Forgotten News Podcast in the search box and you'll find us. It's that easy.
Also, in case you don't already know, you can contact me and talk to me on Twitter at Kit Karen, which is spelled @KITCAREN. You can tweet at me or send me a DM with any thoughts that you might want to share with me. I absolutely love when new messages pop up in my mailbox. Except for, you know, except for those kind of messages. I'm just kidding.
Sorry.
But seriously, the only thing I ask is that you be nice and not salty or mean. You be nice to me and I'll be nice to you. It's that simple. Even if you have a criticism, that's fine. We don't claim to be, perfect. I guarantee that I will reply, no matter what.
Hey everyone, Jessica here. If you'd like to contact and chat with me about this podcast or anything at all, you can reach me on social media at XOXOJessicaXOXO on all platforms.
And at this point, Guess what?
What?
I don't want to guess. Just tell me.
We are at the end of the episode. It's time to wrap up.
You're right. It's already that time.
Goodbye, everyone.
Wait, I have another thing that I want to say. Listeners, please be sure to check out my other podcast, Whispered True Stories, in which I tell tales of true crime, but entirely in whisper. If you like whispered talk and you find it soothing, then you should check it out.
And while you're at it, also listen to my other podcast, Motormouth Radio. And you can find it on probably every podcast app or platform. I write short stories inspired by some of the music that I love. So step on by and have a listen. Motormouth Radio.
And now that you know all that, we really are at the end of the episode. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Wait, before we go, please listen closely. Wear a mask, wash your hands whenever you can, avoid large gatherings, stay 6 feet away from anyone you don't live with.
And if a COVID vaccine is available in your community, and if you're eligible, just make an appointment and go get that shot.
Just do it. What are you waiting for? I mean, other than the end of this episode, of course.
Stay safe and you'll stay alive.
And I think it will be a definite plus for you to be able to add the phrase fully vaccinated to your dating profile.
And
finally, remember, history is no mystery.
Thank you for listening to the Forgotten News Podcast. You will now be returned back to the present day, and we hope that we can count on you to join us for our next episode.
There is more real mysticism in nailing down a coffin lid than in pretending by mere words to throw open the doors of death.
This episode was recorded before a live audience of us. Goodbye, listeners.
Bye-bye.
Bye.